a bipartisan group of lawmakers have introduced a new bill to reform the Public Utilities Commission in order to give rural Colorado more of a voice. We discuss what that might look like on this week's edition of the Power Gab podcast. I'm co-host Jake Fogelman, and you're listening to the audio version of the show. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing and sharing. And to check out the video version, head on over to powergab.org for new episodes every week. Enjoy! All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Power Gab, your go-to show for all things energy and environmental policy in the state of Colorado. I'm Jake Fogelman, joined as always by my co-host Amy Cook. For this week's episode, we wanted to do just a little brief legislative update, since it's been a little while since we've talked about what's going down under the Gold Dome. And in particular, a bill that caught our attention. It's an interesting idea. We also want to reference a bill that we updated you on previously, the bill to include nuclear under the state's clean statute, something we've pushed for a long time here at Independence Institute. Amy's actually, the day we're recording this, getting ready to head down to the Capitol to testify on that. So we'll be sure to update you guys on that, how that goes in a future episode. But today's bill has to do with a different topic, the Public Utilities Commission, and an interesting idea that is bipartisan and looks to reform the commission a little bit.
Yeah, actually, reform for the Public Utilities Commission is long overdue in this state. And we actually wrote a case study about what it is like to try and intervene at the Public Utilities Commission. And that, it was fall 2018 that we wrote that. We had spent roughly 18 months intervening at the Public Utilities Commission regarding Xcel Energy's clean energy plan, the Colorado Energy Plan. I think pretty much everything we said was going to happen once that got passed, the PUC approved it, pretty much has come to fruition. In fact, probably worse. We're spending, it's getting to be even more expensive. So from somebody who has looked at the PUC and spent time at the Public Utilities Commission and has actually been granted status as an official intervener, reform of the Public Utilities Commission is long overdue. So this is a House bill, it's 25-1126. So if you ever hear it, we often refer to these things by number. So yep. HB 1126. And this is actually kind of interesting, Jake. One, it would do is it would expand the size of the Public Utilities Commission. Right now we have three commissioners. I guess we should lay that out first. We have three commissioners, and they are all appointed by the governor with Senate confirmation. Mm-hmm. So not unlike the confirmation process at the federal level, right? Where the president appoints people on his cabinet, and then they go through Senate confirmation. In Colorado, for the Public Utilities Commission, the governor appoints them, and then they go through an approval process in the state Senate. Now, in Colorado, there is opposition, but very little. And what the one thing it says about the Public Utilities Commission is that no more than two commissioners. So if we have three, then no more than two commissioners can be from the same party. So in other words, Jared Polis can't appoint three Democrats, although he did.
I'll say in theory.
Yeah, that's what it says in statute, and then there's a way around it. So you would think there would be two Democrats and a Republican, and you would be wrong. That's what most of us would think, so that you have a balance. You have somebody you might have. They even may want to get to the same place, but maybe they see different things. Not in our state. When they say you get, you appoint three and no two can be from the same party, we have two Democrats and then an unaffiliated, who just so happens to be a Boulder Democrat or used to be a Democrat. He was elected to the state legislature as a Democrat. He served under Governor Ritter in his cabinet under he was executive director of the Colorado Energy Office, which I think was called something else at that time. The number of names that that thing has had is just, but there are, and who I'm talking about is Tom Plant. Tom Plant is the unaffiliated from Boulder. Eric Blank is the chairman. And then Megan Gillum is the third commissioner. All three are progressive left supporters of wind and solar and batteries. So that's the current commission. I'll let you talk about what's in this bill, because like I said, reform is long overdue.
Absolutely. Because like you said, two of the three current commissioners, so Chair Blank and then Tom Plant, are both from Boulder, speaks to maybe not only just ideological conformity, but geographic as well. And that's what Bill 1126 speaks to. So as you said, it would expand the membership from 3 to 5. Two of those new 5 member, hypothetical commission could be the same as they currently are, at-large representatives of the state appointed by the governor. But it would require that the remaining 3 specifically represent districts of the state. So it carves out, it does it by county. I won't list all the counties, but essentially there's a Metro Denver area representative on the PUC. There's a Western Slope representative on the PUC. And then there's the Eastern Plains representative on the PUC. And the whole idea is to get a little bit of at least geographic diversity on the commission, because you know, there's so many things that have come under the PUC's purview over the years, as we've just larded on environmental mandates and concern for disproportionately impacted communities and all these sorts of policy considerations that weren't originally part of the PUC's control. This tells me that folks, especially because of who's carrying the bill, it's a lot of rural area Coloradans from both parties that want to see their areas of the state get a little bit more consideration and a voice on the commission.
So let's say this too. Two really rich areas are represented on the commission right now.
And 3, because Megan Gillum, she's not from Boulder, but she's from like the Vail area.
Yeah, so,
Edwards, I think.
So you have 2 from Boulder and then 1 from, like, to your point, Edwards.
Yeah.
So you have very wealthy communities for whom reasonable rates may look different to them than it does to, let's say, the representatives who are part of this bill. Those reasonable rates might look different to the PUC than it does to the constituents of the sponsors of this particular bill. And as I said, reform of the Public Utilities Commission is long overdue. I would say the other thing on this too, they not only have sort of what I would call exclusive mindsets, right? This is not to say you can't get outside of your area and empathize with people in Pueblo or southeastern Colorado or northeastern Colorado or some. But these people don't really get outside of that because everything's done on Zoom.
Good point.
They don't even come in the office. You have 2 people from Boulder, 1 from Edwards, and they don't leave their communities to go do their jobs. Now, I'm not saying they never do. I'm just saying on a day-to-day basis, when there's a Public Utilities Commission hearing, they are not in the PUC offices where people can come face-to-face and petition their government and make comments to their government. You can do it on Zoom, but you can't actually meet with them in person because they're not there.
Right. One thing that I think is interesting about the bill, speaking about folks wanting to see those regions of the country or the state get a say, rather, the co-sponsors, the co-primes, you have a Democrat, Representative Matthew Martinez, who represents Pueblo and the surrounding rural counties around Pueblo. You have Representative Ty Winter, who represents rural southeastern Colorado, and then Senator Byron Pelton, a Republican, who represents rural northeastern Colorado. And if you think about what are the major decisions that the PUC has made over the last year? Where have those largely taken place? Shuttering Comanche 3, for example. Well, that affects Pueblo. Building the, what they call the Colorado Power Pathways Transmission Project, all up and down the Eastern Plains. So all of the decisions that these folks are making end up in these folks' backyard. And I think that speaks a little bit to why they would like to have some say in the decisions that get made, because these are billions and billions and billions of dollars of investment decisions, disruptions to land, to, you know, agriculture. Obviously, Pueblo, the big concern is what the disappearance of Comanche 3 means for that community's tax revenue and employment. I think it's noteworthy to see not only bipartisan, bicameral, but the regions that these folks come from that are back in this bill.
Yeah, and so it would be 5 commissioners instead of 3, mm-hmm. and they're still all appointed by the governor. Mm-hmm. And according to this bill, it would be no more than three could be from the same political party. Although you could still play the same game,
right,
by saying, okay, we'll do 3 Democrats and 2 unaffiliated that just so happen to be Democrats.
Right.
I mean, I guess potentially, I'm unaffiliated.
Right.
I could be. Do you think you'd appoint me?
Start lobbying.
Anyway, when we talked about this bill, you actually thought maybe there could be, what if there was an amendment?
Yeah, I thought a modest improvement might be keep it at no more than 2 from the same party, because then you could get a scenario where 2 Democrats, 2 unaffiliateds, and those unaffiliateds could be, you know, nominally unaffiliated, but still Democrats. But it would force at least 1 member to be from the Republican Party, which, that's a minority party in the state, sure, but it's still a sizable portion of its residents and its folks that are paying their utility bills, ratepayers. There's Republican ratepayers out there. And making sure that there's at least 1 voice for that side, I think, would improve the balance of this bill.
Right. And so the other thing is, if you're going to get rural areas, those tend to be more conservative anyway.
Sure, yeah.
It's a bipartisan bill, and down in Pueblo, you have a legislative coalition that is, it's split between Democrats and Republicans, but it is an area that I think they voted for Trump, didn't they?
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. So they have been, let's say,
and the Pueblo mayor is a Republican.
Yeah, trending. They have been, yeah, and they flipped, I think, the city council. They flipped some commissioners. Pueblo County Commissioners Danaya Escar got defeated. So it's trending a different direction. And so to have, and it's okay, like to have a conservative voice on the committee, it's okay,
right?
Like it's okay to have disagreements. But what we have right now is they want this appearance of unanimous. It reminds me a little bit of school boards where you have to have a unanimous decision. You don't.
Right.
Somebody can dissent. And I will say this too. If you go from 3 to 5, regulatory capture is going to be a little bit more challenging, because regulatory capture, what do I mean by that? It means where it, so you have a body that is supposed to regulate an entity. What happens is that entity ends up having so much sway or so much influence over the commission that often when you're down there, and you'll see it if you intervene or get involved, those decisions are made before the hearings even start.
Right.
So, for instance, the regulatory capture, this is one of the things we saw when we intervened, the Coalition of Ratepayers intervened in this Xcel Energy case. When we intervened on that, you could see, I mean, the regulatory capture is real. That whole side of the room, it's totally lopsided. It's, here's where the regulated entities attorneys sit and their lobbyists and their expert witnesses, and it takes up that entire side. And then there's the handful of others of us, you know, and I'm there with, you know, our 1 expert witness and our 2 attorneys. And so, it's very, very real, but it isn't just the regulated entity. And don't get me wrong, Xcel Energy has significant influence over the Public Utilities Commission. But the other one is is, in this case, in the state of Colorado, it's Western Resource Advocates, which is opposing this bill. Why? Because they know it's going to be harder for them to have the regulatory capture that they enjoy right now. They intervene in all of these rate cases, and their goal, their mission is wind, solar, and batteries. So that they've made it their business model to be the influencer at the Public Utilities Commission on behalf of the environmental left.
Not to mention the current chair of the Public Utilities Commission used to head up the energy work at, it wasn't called it that at the time, but at what is now Western Resource Advocates. So you talk about regulatory capture. To your point about them being the opposition, we pulled the Secretary of State lobby report on this bill just to see. And the only folks that are opposing are Western Resource Advocates and 350 Colorado. So that tells you a little bit about the mindset of what they think they have with the current commission.
Yeah, right.
Versus, you know, you don't see any other groups. There's a bunch of people monitoring all sorts of regulated bodies, Black Hills, you know, oil and gas folks, and
Tri-State.
They're all just monitoring because, you know, it obviously affects what they do. But the only folks that are opposing are these environmental groups that routinely intervene at the PUC to try to put the pedal to the metal, to whatever gets them to wind, solar, and batteries, or electrification, or whatever the issue happens to be. Whatever gets them there fastest, they're the ones intervening and pushing for that sort of a thing.
Right. Now, I'm going to throw out something else. And one of the things, Jake, we should talk about, and I know you pulled this, is how do other states, what do they do with their Public Utilities Commission?
Right.
And is this model in particular where you have three that represent areas. And by the way, my friends in Weld County, we got thrown into the metro area.
Yeah.
I think we should petition to get out.
I'm sure they'll love to hear that. Yeah.
I'm like, could you please fix that? But you looked at this sort of model where you'd have three that are regional and two at large.
Yeah. So this particular construction as envisioned by Bill 1126 would be the first of its kind in the country. But there are similarities in other states. So the vast majority of states do kind of what Colorado does, where the commissioners are appointed by the governor. But in a sizable handful, they're elected. And then in a smaller subset of those elected commission states, they're elected by district, sort of like a congressman would be. So you get the geographic representation there, but they're directly elected in that case. In this scenario, where there's two at-large members, meaning statewide members, and three regional members, all appointed by the governor, that no other state has ever done that before. And I think it's an interesting model. Not sure it goes as far as maybe we would like, but it's an interesting idea, at least a first step, to shake things up in a state that's done it the traditional way for so long.
And actually, I actually think it's kind of interesting, too. You have two at-large and three regional. It's a little bit like the CU Regents, how they do it. And
yeah.
I think Colorado is unique in how it does its CU Regents as well. It's Regents, it's collegiate Regents. There aren't a lot that are elected, and certainly not a lot that are elected in the way that Colorado does it. And that brings me to the point about the Public Utilities Commission. I think at this point it needs to be elected. These people are so far removed from they regulate, you know, monopoly utilities and other industries. I mean, it's not just utilities, but that's the bulk of their work. But they are so insular, and it's such an inside. I mean, it's an insider's playground. It's lawyers, special interest group, unelected bureaucrats regulators. That give all the appearance. It's like Kabuki theater about how they're regulating something, but in the end, they all come to the same agreement. They put out a press release that says, "Yay, we came to an agreement," and they pat themselves on the back about it. And it was really hard, thoughtful process. It is the exact same thing every time. And what has happened in Colorado is the Public Utilities Commission was originally supposed to be, the trade-off of a Public Utilities Commission was they were supposed to be the eyes and ears of the ratepayer. And they were supposed to be sort of, think about it this way, you have monopoly utilities, we're a vertically integrated system. You have monopoly utilities like Xcel and Black Hills. And what the Public Utilities Commission was supposed to do is sort of take the place of that rough and tumble world of competition. They were going to hold utilities feet to the fire because you've given them a guaranteed market, and you give them the ability to socialize cost and privatize profits across, you know, and you do this to ratepayer. Ratepayers are captive. So the Public Utilities Commission, in exchange for that and this guaranteed rate of return, is the Public Utilities Commission was going to be tough on it.
Right.
We're gonna come after, you know, we're gonna act like the arbiters of a competitive market. And that is gone.
Right.
And that's why I think that social contract is broken in Colorado. And maybe it's time to start electing our PUC commissioners.
To your point, I don't think it's any accident you're seeing bills like this pop up now with bipartisan support, no less, as the state has gone further down the road and you're starting to see the eye-popping or mind-boggling, as PUC Chair Eric Blank would call it, costs starting to pile up from these, you know, policy directives and the regulatory capture and the state legislature realizing they can treat monopoly utilities like their personal policy vessel that just put something into law and let Xcel run wild getting it done. I don't think it's an accident that you're seeing bills like this pop up. So.
Yeah.
Well, of course, stay on top of it as it goes through. It's currently scheduled for its first committee hearing in House Energy and Environment on the 20th, February 20th at 1:30. So if folks that are listening want to go, you know, poke into the hearing or they want to testify, that's when it's supposed to get its first hearing. That may change. But as we're coming up on time here, Amy, I'll give you the last word or any takeaways for our listeners.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. One is that the social contract with the Public Utilities Commission, regulated entities, and ratepayers is broken. There is no one representing ratepayers. And there's another office out there. We didn't talk about it. I'm not going to even mention it. We won't get in it today. But there's no one out there representing ratepayers. That social contract, if you're on the ratepayer side, it is broken. That's number one. Number two, it's badly need of reform. PUC needs to be reformed. Whether it is this bill, which I would consider a first step and a very modest step, it will be added cost. But for ratepayers, we need something that controls our own cost. And if it means two more extra people that come from areas that, what do we always hear, that look like us,
right?
We should. I'm okay with that. We need reform for the Public Utilities Commission. And then the last thing, if we don't get reform, make sure you've got that generator on standby so that when the power goes out, like it did in my house a couple of days ago for a little over an hour and it was bitter cold, you've got something that you can at least plug your space heater into.
Sage advice as always. But that does it for us on another episode of Power Gab. If you like what you saw here, you can head over to powergab.org to check out our entire back catalog. We produce new episodes every single week. We're also available wherever you get your audio podcasts, whether that's Spotify or Apple. And if you want to reach out to us to suggest future show topics or guests that you'd like to see us interview, you can send those to info@powergab.org. We'd love to hear from you guys. But until next week, we'll see you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Power Gab, I hope you'll share it with a friend.
Or even an enemy.
You can listen to more episodes on all of your favorite streaming services. We release a new episode each week.
If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for a show topic, email info@powergab.org. And to watch the video version, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.